Truth Revolution.
Welcome to Truth Revolution. This is where faith and reason meet. I'm Pastor Dave. He is Pastor Jeff. And we are from Revolution Church in Salina, Kansas.
So glad you joined us today. Everybody who filled out our survey, thank you. It's been going well. Man, you guys have actually given us some powerful responses.
Right?
I read the comments you make, and I'm like, wow, these people actually like us.
What did you expect?
I don't know.
Pitchforks and torches?
Maybe, but you know what? Thank you for filling out the survey, all of you who did. We are going to make a change. The large AM station we're on, we're going to be changing off of that station, but we're going to, for now, stay on everything else we're doing. So make sure you're doing the podcast, make sure you're doing the YouTube, whatever, all that stuff. The podcast is the big one, truthrevolution.tv. But today, we're talking about the solar eclipse.
Whoa.
Because it's happening on in just a couple days.
I can't wait.
I can't remember if it's Monday or Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
Right. I better figure this out. So, we have a special guest because Dave and I are not astronomers yet.
Yet.
So, Dave, what are we doing about this?
Well, we're going to have a body transplant, and Hugh's brain is going to go in my head.
Actually, astronomer Hugh Ross is founder and president of Reasons to Believe, an organization dedicated to integrating scientific fact and biblical faith. His books include Why the Universe is the Way It Is, Hidden Treasures in the Book of Job, and Navigating Genesis, three of my favorites right there.
I just got excited. Sorry.
Dr. Ross, thanks for joining us on Truth Revolution again.
Oh, my pleasure.
It's always good to have you here. Now, you started getting interested in astronomy when you were young. I remember that.
Yeah, 7 years of age.
7 years of age. But even you weren't alive during the last perfect solar eclipse, were you?
Well, I've tried to see three of them during my growing up years, and every time it got rained out. So I'm really looking forward to this one on Monday.
Gotcha.
Because we're actually taking a group of 150 people to a desert portion of eastern Oregon.
Wow.
I'm hoping I'll actually be able to see one this time.
That's awesome. Now, this one, I remember there was one in like 1978, but the last time it was like this, wasn't that 1918, or am I confusing something there?
Well, what's unusual about this one is it's crossing the 48 states. I mean, you got like 200 million people that were within an hour's drive of the total eclipse path. From what I can understand, this is going to be the most heavily observed total solar eclipse in the history of humanity.
Wow.
I believe it.
That is awesome.
Everybody's really excited about it.
Cool. Okay, now we're actually going to talk. We're going to make the argument that solar eclipses help prove God's existence. Now, this is a really big deal. They help prove God's existence. First, to start out, why or how rare are solar eclipses?
Well, you get 2 to 5 per year. But the total eclipse path is only like 60, 70 miles wide. So most people have not seen a total solar eclipse. And keep in mind, 70% of Earth's surface is ocean. And so typically you get these total eclipses happening over the ocean. What's unusual is this one's actually crossing North America. There's only going to be 2 of these in a 100-year window.
Wow.
There's one happening on Monday. Another one will happen 7 years from now. Then you got a long, long wait for the next one.
It just boggles my mind how this is so predictable.
Right.
I mean, people have calculated this with such specificity, but that's actually part of what makes this so special, isn't it?
Well, you know, stars and planets are relatively simple systems, and they obey differential calculus. So yeah, we can tell you when solar eclipses are going to happen. Literally millions of years in advance, even hundreds of millions of years in advance, because the math is so straightforward.
Almost like there's order to the universe, right?
Yeah, it's almost like it was designed and not just on accident. Right. This is actually one of my favorite arguments for God's existence is, I mean, you know, people make the claim that evolution occurred and so our biological systems aren't good evidence. We can debate that, but there's no evolution when it comes to the cosmos, is there?
Well, eclipses are quite common in the universe. What's really rare is a perfect eclipse. And that's what you're going to be seeing on Monday. The disk of the moon in the sky is the same size as the disk of the sun. And so when the moon's disk goes in front of the sun, it perfectly occults the sun's disk, which allows you to see the corona and the atmosphere and stars that are really close to the sun's disk. And that actually was a big deal because back in 1917, you have Albert Einstein publishing his theory of general relativity. And he predicted that the gravity of the sun would bend the beams of light from more distant stars. And it was Sir Arthur Eddington, a British mathematician, who organized an expedition to Brazil to observe the total solar eclipse that was occurring there. And he was the one that was able to demonstrate that indeed the gravity of the sun bent the light of stars by precisely the amount that Einstein's theory had predicted. Mm. In fact, he later boasted, if it wasn't for that solar eclipse, nobody today would know who Albert Einstein was. But because of that 1918 solar eclipse, Albert Einstein became a household name around the world and actually persuaded physicists, hey, maybe there's more to this general relativity. And that led to the space-time theorems, which prove that there must be a God beyond space and time that created our universe. So yeah, solar eclipses are a big deal.
Yeah, okay, and so you wrote a blog post called Thank God for Perfect Solar Eclipses, and in there you give the exact time. So Einstein predicted that starlight would bend by a maximum of 1.751 arc seconds, and when they measured it, it was 1.8 plus or minus 0.2. So he nailed it, didn't he?
He really did nail it. And that was the first demonstration that the predictions of general relativity were accurate, and hence the theory was true. Today, general relativity ranks as the most exhaustively tested and best proven principle in all of physics.
Wow.
We're not just proving general relativity to one place of the decimal, but to 15 places of the decimal.
Wow. That's pretty impressive. Okay, so tell our listeners exactly what general relativity is. And then we're going to move on to why does that show God exists?
Well, most people are familiar with special relativity, E equals mc squared. And that's a theory of velocities. Mm-hmm. Einstein, several years after he produced his special theory, produced his general theory, which includes the effects not only of velocities, but of accelerations. And he produced a set of differential equations. And when you solve those equations, it predicts that the universe will have a beginning. Mm. But it's all assuming that the theory of general relativity reliably describes the movements of bodies in the universe. And the solar eclipse of 1918 was our first test of general relativity. It passed the test, but now there are dozens of tests that it's passed, and it's passed them all with flying colors. But the other thing that's special about perfect solar eclipses, you get to see the corona of the sun and the atmosphere of the sun. If it wasn't for perfect solar eclipses, we astronomers would be ignorant about stellar atmospheres and the corona of stars, and that would make it very difficult for us to develop detailed models of the interior physics of stars, the burning history of stars, and that knowledge has been fundamental in establishing the Big Bang creation model, which establishes the God of the Bible is responsible for creating the universe. So there's multiple ways perfect solar eclipses really are a boon to the Christian faith.
Okay, so we start with general relativity, and that really showed, I don't know if the listeners caught that or not, but general relativity really showed that the universe had to have a beginning, which was a big deal because up to that point, a lot of scientists and philosophers thought the universe was eternal, had always existed. Is that correct?
That's correct, and it was based on Newtonian mechanics. Because if it's just Newtonian mechanics and the universe is finite, gravity would collapse everything into a dense ball. But that's not how the universe looks. And so people took Newtonian mechanics and says the only way we can prevent that central collapse is that we make the universe infinitely large and infinitely old. And that was the predominant cosmological model for over 200 years. Albert Einstein's theory of general relativity overturned that model and said, hey, it's not infinite. It has a finite beginning, and the beginning is only billions of years ago.
Mm. And the big deal about an infinite universe is if the universe has always existed, you don't need God to create the universe. Right. In fact, that flies in the face of the book of Genesis, which says God created, God spoke. And so for 200 years, science models, the predominant science models said No, we have no need for God until finally this came along. And is it true that the Big Bang was kind of not wanting to be accepted by people because it was very theological in its implications?
Yeah, I write about that in my book, The Fingerprint of God, how in the early part of the 20th century, when these discoveries were showing the validity of general relativity, many physicists and astronomers strongly rejected that idea, saying, hey, that means there would be a beginning, and there's a beginning to the universe. In fact, Sir Arthur Eddington said a beginning to the universe would be philosophically repugnant to him. That got published in the British journal Nature. But eventually, the evidence for general relativity became so overwhelmingly strong that astronomers and physicists were forced to accept the fact there really is a beginning to the universe. There's a beginning to space and time, and hence there must be an agent beyond space and time that brought our universe into existence. But yeah, I mean, physicists and astronomers were brought to that conclusion kicking and screaming.
I remember a quote. I can't remember who said it, and I'm going to say it slightly wrong, but it was something like, scientists had scaled over mountains of ignorance and up large swaths of hills to climb up to the highest peak of knowledge. And when they pulled themselves up, they found there a group of theologians who'd been singing for thousands of years.
Right. So. Yeah, that's in the book, God and the Astronomers, written by a Harvard astronomer, himself an agnostic. But that's how he closed the book off.
Yeah.
Here we climb this mountain of knowledge, and the theologians were waiting to congratulate us.
Yeah. So it's a really, really funny quote. So let's go back to then to the solar eclipse, perfect solar eclipses. The actually being able to have this perfect solar eclipse led credence to the idea that the Big Bang existed. How did it do that?
Well, first of all, it established that the universe indeed had a beginning, and then thanks to our detailed study of the sun's atmosphere and corona, and our recognition that applies to other stars as well, we astronomers were able to build very detailed models for the birth and the burning history of stars, which proved to be exactly what the Big Bang creation model predicted. Came up with an age for the universe that was consistent with Big Bang cosmology. So everything was fitting together in a very beautiful way. Thanks to eclipses, we had two independent pathways to show that indeed the Big Bang creation model indeed is accurate. And part of my coming to faith in Jesus Christ was reading through the Old Testament and recognizing that the Old Testament had stated all the fundamental features of Big Bang cosmology thousands of years before any astronomer or physicist even had a hint that the universe had these properties.
Wow.
You know, just to give you some examples, the Bible tells us that the universe has a space-time beginning, that it continuously expands from that space-time beginning under a pervasive law of decay, which would imply that the universe gets colder and colder as it gets older and older in a highly predictable way. In fact, in some of my books, I show you the biblically predicted cooling curve for the universe than actual measurements we astronomers have made, showing that what the Bible predicted thousands of years ago is accurate to several places of the decimal.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Okay, but let me ask this question. How many moons about are in our solar system?
Well, if we don't count the moons orbiting around distant asteroids, 178.
Okay, so there's 178 moons.
Moons produce eclipses, but ours is the only one that gives you a perfect solar eclipse.
So our moon's the only one that gives a perfect solar eclipse.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's we're going to come back on after this break. We're going to talk maybe about the mathematics of it.
Right.
How does this happen? Is it likely to happen, or is this a giant coincidence? We want to check out the math because we like the math. Okay, we'll be right back after this break. But Dave, what website should they go to?
TruthRevolution.tv.
And we're going to link to Reasons.org.
Right.
You got to get there. You got to check out some of these books that Dr. Ross has written, Navigating Genesis, Why the Universe is the Way It Is.
We got a couple of listeners that are like, they're total fanboys of Reasons now because of the show. And it's like, it was really awesome. It's been a nice connection.
Yeah, I actually was talking with one of the guys He said, man, I love you guys' show, but now I love to listen to Reasons to Believe just as much.
Yeah,
and I'm
awesome.
Like, that's great, because they write books that are vital. You got to get this stuff. So, all right, Amazon.com is going to have all those, but we're going to link to their website. You can check it out, reasons.org and trueoftherevolution.tv. We'll be right back.
Why should you go to church?
You know, Jesus said we should be the church.
But before then, the word church was used for business meetings. If you were there, you're part of the church because you were doing the work.
Jesus didn't say, hey, everyone, show up for an hour and hang out.
Not at all. He said, be my church.
Meaning, if you follow me, you should get together with other people who follow me and work together. So church is us coming together to do God's work together.
www.revo.church.
That's R-E-V-O.church.
Do you love Truth Revolution?
Of course they do, Dave.
Well, if you do, or...
Or if you appreciate the fact that thousands of people are being taught that Christianity is compatible with science and logic.
Or if you simply love the fact that we hear from people often who say, this show changed my life, I love Jesus.
Then consider a donation.
You can visit truthrevolution.tv or Revolution Church and donate.
We don't get paid from this show.
But it's our goal to give... Give truth, give knowledge, give encouragement.
And your giving keeps all of our giving going.
Truth Shots from TruthRevolution.tv and Revolution Church. Here's your host, Dave, and Pastor Jeff.
Sylvia Brown has been called a spiritual teacher, a psychic, and a medium.
But the reality is far different. She is, at best, a skilled manipulator who believes her own lies.
In 2004, she predicted the kidnapped Amanda Berry was dead, telling her mother, she's not alive, honey.
Amanda Berry was far from dead. For 10 years, she was held captive. One can only imagine the damage that may have been done by people believing in Amanda's death.
And this wasn't the first time Brown incorrectly predicted Sean Horbeck's death.
He was found alive 4 years later, though the psychic told the parents to lose hope.
What does the Bible say about such teachings?
There are constant warnings against psychics, mediums, astrology, and other practices.
Seeking mystical information seems to be frowned upon.
Definitely. God said through the prophet Jeremiah, the prophets are prophesying lies in my name. I have not sent them or appointed them. They're prophesying to you false vision, divinations, idolatries, and delusions of their own minds.
TruthRevolution.tv.
You know, Revolution Church isn't the only great church in town. There's lots of them. For instance, we love Crossroads Church.
Hey, if you don't like religion or traditional church, but you know there's got to be more to life than what you've got going on right now, check us out at Crossroads Church. We're a church with a difference.
Now, what does that mean?
Well, we've got rock music, informal comfort, a bunch of broken people who are actually happy, and kicking words of life that'll set you free.
And when do you meet?
Sunday mornings, 10 o'clock.
And where can they find you?
Facebook us at Crossroads Church Salina.
Do you know, or are you, a woman between 18 and 22 aging out of foster care or without a place to live?
If your goal is to continue your education, whether it's a college degree or GED, the Hope House may be the place for you.
Located in Salina, Kansas, Hope House is a beautiful home, providing not only a place to live, but a place to grow.
As a program of the Ashby House, Hope House provides dedicated volunteers and staff members who are there to help you accomplish your goals.
If this sounds like it might be a place for you or someone you know, please visit hopehouseks.org.
That's hopehouseks.org.
Truth Revolution.
Now we're back talking about the solar eclipse. Why does it prove God's existence?
And so far we've discovered that general relativity was proven by Einstein, which showed that the Big Bang existed. Mm-hmm. But then solar eclipses lended credence to that Big Bang and lended credence to the idea that the universe had a beginning. There's another reason why these eclipses are such a big deal. All right, so Dr. Ross told us there were well over 100 moons in our solar system. This is the only moon that produces perfect solar eclipses. But we want to know the math. I mean, what are the odds like that this would happen? Is this a 1 in 10 thing, a 1 in 20 thing? How likely is it, just generally speaking, and maybe get as specific as we can, how likely is it that this sort of thing is going to happen?
Well, our moon is spiraling away from the Earth. So in the past, it was much closer. And was much closer, the disk of the moon was quite a bit bigger than the disk of the sun, which means you don't get to see the corona, you don't get to see the atmosphere or stars close to the sun's disk. And if you go into the future, the moon will be so far away that it won't block out all of the light of the sun. Matter of fact, as it is right now, about one-third of the solar eclipses that occur, you get a tiny annulus of light around the disk of the moon, which means you don't see the corona, you don't see the atmosphere. In fact, you need special glasses because it never really gets dark.
Huh.
And so we happen to be living at that one time in the history of the Earth-Moon system where we humans can see perfect solar eclipses.
Wow.
So you want to see them now, because in the future you won't be able to see them. And a good thing God didn't put us here much earlier in the past, because likewise back then we wouldn't be able to see perfect solar eclipses either. And I think the thing that really impresses me as an astronomer, the time window in which we can see perfect solar eclipses perfectly overlaps the time window in the history of the sun when human life is possible here on Earth. Because stars are like human beings. They're very unstable when they're young, and stable when they're old. They're maximally stable when they're middle age. In the case of our star, the sun, the window in which it's sufficiently stable to allow human beings to have civilization the face of the Earth is only 100,000 years wide.
Jeez.
Here we have our star that can burn for 9 billion years. Right now it's in the exact middle of its burning phase, and there's this 100,000 year window in which we can exist in a civilized state on Earth because of the physics of the sun, and it happens to overlap that time window of the moon spiraling away from the Earth, where we can see perfect solar eclipses.
And humanity has existed for just around 100,000 years, give or take a little bit. But so you're saying we came onto the scene the exact moment that the sun went into a state that would allow for our existence and would benefit us, like growing and spreading around the globe.
That's right.
And we talked about
another 40 to 50,000 years, we'll be exiting that window. Right now, we're in the time window where global human civilization is possible.
So this, I mean, get this around your brains. Right. Okay, so how old is the Earth? 4.6 billion?
4.5662 billion years, give or take 0.0001 billion.
He's showing off now.
He's showing off. Okay, so.
That's awesome.
Something we know out of five places of the decimal.
Yeah. I'm like 4.6, and he's like, well, you're way off.
Right.
So like the Earth is 4 billion years old. Mm-hmm. Now those billions and billions of years, there's only a 150,000 some year window mm-hmm. that these perfect solar eclipses would happen. And it's the same amount of time that would allow for humans to flourish. And humans just happened to come on the scene at the exact same moment that both of those things came into existence.
Hmm.
Well, just to be accurate, the window in which you're going to have perfect solar eclipses is a few million years wide.
Okay.
And the reason why it's a little bit wider, the moon's distance from the Earth actually varies a little bit, from about 226,000 miles to 252. And so right in the middle of that, you get perfect solar eclipses. So not all of our solar eclipses are perfect, but we are in that window where they can happen. They're happening with maximum frequency now, but they're actually were occurring at a less frequent rate. A few 100,000 years in the past, a few 100,000 years in the future.
Wow.
But the time window in which we can have global human civilization, it's less than 100,000 years wide.
Okay. Wow. All right. Right. We're going to do a Bible contradiction, and we're going to come right back to this.
Bible contradiction.
All right. Bible contradiction today brought to you by thethinkingatheist.com.
Okay.
All right.
Is incest wrong? That's their question. Genesis 17, 15 through 16 says, God also said to Abraham, as for your wife, Sarai, you are no longer to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. I will bless her and will surely give you a son by her. I will bless her so that she will be the mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her.
So he marries his half-sister.
Right. However, Leviticus 20:17, if a man marries his sister, the daughter of either his father or his mother, and they have sexual relations, it is a disgrace. They must be cut off before the eyes of their people. He has dishonored his sister and will be held responsible. So incest is a disgrace now.
Okay, we have the cracked acronym. Mm-hmm. We're going to use a few different letters to understand why this is not a contradiction.
Okay.
All right? First of all, C for credibility. Abraham didn't marry his sister. It was his half-sister. So that's mm-hmm. a little different. But also, Abraham, he did that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before God made that law about incest.
Right.
So what was God's intention for this law? Why did God make the law? So we're going to go to the A for author's intention. Number one is biology, all right? It's possible that the biological implications of marrying his sister weren't as bad during Abraham's day. But even if they were, the law, and this is the second thing, the law what's a separation, a learning to separate yourself from certain things, a symbol of holiness. Okay, don't eat pigs was a law. Don't put two crops in one field was a law. Don't wear cloths of two different kinds was a law. Why? Well, there's lots of instructions throughout the Bible in the Old Testament about not mixing holy with unholy. They weren't supposed to marry foreigners. Why? So they didn't turn to other gods. They weren't supposed to combine the worship of real gods with other gods. And this is a symbolism. This is a shadow pointing to that reality. So the spiritual point, unless you know this, is going to be confusing. The spiritual point was what the Old Testament was all about.
Right.
God was separating light from darkness, good people from bad people, Satan from himself. And the laws were merely a shadow pointing to that reality. The biggest point isn't about marrying a sister. The actual point is about learning not to mess with evil.
Right.
And that separating yourself from things is okay. Dr. Ross, anything you want to add to that?
Well, one thing I could add is the biological point that early in humanity's history, the risk of propagating a genetic defect through brother-sister marriages was quite low. And so no problem in the time scale of Genesis. Mm. By the time you get to Exodus, humans have been around long enough where the genetic risk is no longer small. And you see this in the book of Exodus, how we're setting up these laws, Moses said, so they will not have the diseases of the Egyptians.
Mm.
And what's happening in the Egyptian royal court was the belief that the Pharaoh could not marry common people. He had to marry people within the family of Pharaoh. And so you had the pharaohs for many generations marrying their sisters. And if you have repeated brother-sister marriages in a single family, you will develop genetic defects. Usually it takes about 20 generations before that happens. And it's well known historically that in the pharaohs, after a few centuries had gone by, the pharaohs were hemophiliac. And that was because of repeated brother-sister marriages. And so basically Moses is saying, we're not going to have brother-sister marriages anymore. The risk of propagating a genetic defect is simply too high. But it wasn't that high in the days of Abraham. No risk for Abraham. No risk for the sons of Adam and Eve to marry their sisters.
There we have it. So not only is it a type and shadow that's pointing to a bigger spiritual reality, it's also a literal biological change that took place. At one point, it wasn't a big deal. Then it was a big deal. So then God made a law about it. That's not a contradiction. It's just a recognition that different times and different places require different rules.
Bible contradiction.
All right, not a contradiction.
All right, back to the awesome, perfect solar eclipse. Mm-hmm. Dr. Ross, can you just tell us, for our listeners, before we get off the radio section here, about how long is this eclipse going to last?
Well, where we're going in eastern Oregon, it's about 2 minutes. But we're also going to get on a little hill where we can watch the shadow of the eclipse race towards us at 1,500 miles an hour.
Wow. Whoa!
It's dark over us, and we get to see it race away. So it gives you a little more time to enjoy it. And you know, we got one person coming. He's been to 5 solar eclipses already.
What?
He says the phenomena is so beautiful, so gorgeous, that when you see one, you get addicted. You
wow.
see them all.
How does he see 5? Does he like get a boat and go out on the ocean or something?
Yes. I mean, he basically travels to see these different total solar eclipses. Hmm. And we got one gentleman coming with his homemade 40-inch diameter telescope. He's bringing on a flatbed truck because this place is so dark at night. We're going to do star parties for a couple of nights after the solar eclipse. And the whole idea is God not only designed our universe and our solar system to prepare a wonderful home for us. He also made it really, really beautiful.
Mm.
So we're going to be showing people the beauty of the total solar eclipse. But also the beauty of the night sky in a place that has no lights.
Wow, that's beautiful.
That sounds awesome.
All right, one last question before we go. A lot of people are asking me this question. I say the answer is no, but I'm just going to check with you. Is this perfect solar eclipse a sign of the end times?
I think you got it right. The answer is no. Just look at the prophecies in the book of Ezekiel. Chapters 32 through to 40 talk about the rebirth of nation of Israel for a second time, and there's all kinds of prophecies in there that have not yet been fulfilled.
Mm.
So I tell people, don't worry about signs in the skies if these prophecies are not yet fulfilled.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining us today. Dr. Ross, as always, it's just great to have you on the show. This has been fun for us. So thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right, Dave, what website should they go to?
TruthRevolution.tv.
And we're going to link to Dr. Ross's organization, Reasons to Believe. Got to check them out. And when you go to TruthRevolution.tv, check out old shows. If you're willing to donate, you can give to the show to make sure it stays on air and stays going strong. We really appreciate everyone who gives and everyone who shares and everyone who listens. If you have a question, go ahead and send it in. We're going to answer some of those soon.